Guys, it's the Bon Appetit Foodcast. I'm Adam Rappaport. Super Bowl 51 is upon us, and I'm not even talking about the game. I'm talking about the food. What are you cooking? What are you cooking for the big game? Are we talking nachos or wings or chili? I don't know. What's on tap? I got together with two proven veterans, Bon Appetit food director Carla Lolly Music, and my good friend and home cook extraordinaire Gabe Tesoriero, who's like a big shot executive over at Def Jam Records, but more importantly, a hell of a cook and a hell of a host. And so I talked to them about what they're game planning for the big day. And then because, like, you know, like every other commercial during the Super Bowl was for beer, I have to talk beer. I sit down with our resident beer nerds, Alex Delaney and Brad Leone from Bon Appetit, to talk about their various sort of craft beer interest for the game, what they're serving, what they're chilling, yeah, and even maybe what's on tap, literally. But before we get to that, I've got something to tell you about. We've teamed up with Sur La Table to bring you our healthy-ish online cooking class, full of practical and delicious inspiration for eating well, but, you know, not like in a preachy, healthy sort of way. You'll learn how to make 7 amazingly tasty recipes with fresh ingredients, lots of nutrition, plus step-by-step instructions, foolproof tips, and time-saving techniques from our executive chef, Mary Nolan. And the best part, it's on demand, which means you can stream it right into your kitchen whenever you want. Visit us at bonappetit.com/healthyishclass. Check it out. All right, let's talk Super Bowl. All right, guys, I'm going to make a statement. Maybe you agree with me, maybe you don't. But I want to go ahead and say that the Super Bowl is now the greatest eating holiday of the year. Can I say that?
Strong agree.
Really? Ooh.
Strong agree.
Yeah.
Ooh, I might have to think about that. No, it's not for me.
Well, what is then?
Christmas Eve.
Ooh. Oh, do you like the whole
feast?
The 7 fishes?
Yeah, it's awesome.
That's kind of cool.
Thanksgiving's jumped the shark a little bit for me. It doesn't deliver on the hype. It's a lot of prep work. It's a lot of anticipation. Yeah. And it ends up in what I like to call anticipointment.
Ooh, yes. I think there's a lot. I will say this about Thanksgiving. We will get to the Super Bowl. But my issue is, like, there's a lot of family sort of pressure, anxiety.
So much.
You have to go to this person's house or you have to have these in-laws over. Not that I'm getting into the in-laws here. But it's just like, and then you have to, like, oh, well, we have to make this dish. We have to do the sweet potatoes. And it's like, Super Bowl, you can do whatever the hell you want, right?
First of all, I want to say shout to my new in-laws, Andy and Amy.
Love you guys. You guys are great.
Gabe is recently betrothed, so he's playing nice right now. But I what I love about the Super Bowl, and Gabe, I've been to your place several times, it's like every year you can kind of freestyle, do a new thing, have a cooking project, introduce all sorts of new flavors, and it's like...
Not if you're a lolly.
Ooh, all right. So let's get down to it, because I want to start with, like, the main course, like the centerpiece and...
The event.
The event, the main event, and... Carla, so your Super Bowl is kind of like Thanksgiving in that it's the same thing
every
year?
Well, the way I look at the Super Bowl is that, like any other, you know, eating holiday, it's basically just a family holiday, right? So my dad my dad is super into the game.
Frank Lolly.
Kids are super into it, but the rest of us are just there for the food. So it's really just all about the food. I don't actually care about the game.
Where is there?
My parents' house.
Which is?
On the Upper East Side.
Okay.
Yeah, so we, like, post up over there, but, like, usually, I don't know, the game is on, and some people are in the kitchen.
And how many people total?
Could be 8 to 10.
Okay.
It's pretty much a family, it's a family affair. We don't, yeah, this is not, like, a giant, I think you guys are hosting, like, big open houses.
Yeah, we do, I mean, yeah, we've been a small crew of us. Expanding now with kids.
Yeah.
Have been together for about 15 years doing this thing. And the numbers can go anywhere from 15 to 20 to 25, depending on what stragglers show up.
And I've been lucky enough to be invited to Gabe and his friend Rick's place last several years. And it is a mix of friends, basically, with their own families.
Right.
So is your mom cooking, and what's her go-to?
Right. So, like every other holiday, like you said, we're not allowed to change anything. And I would love to mix it up, but then you get a whole lot of blowback from the email chain gets pretty crazy.
I would like to say subtle resentment on Carla's part, but there's nothing subtle.
Well, I'm like, can we change it? And then my dad's like, I like the gumbo. And then that's it. So we have gumbo. Like, not that gumbo's bad. Gumbo's delicious. My mom makes delicious rice to go with it. It's got...
Wait. What do you mean delicious rice? Isn't rice just
like,
rice?
No, it's like special and buttery when she makes it.
Because she puts a lot of butter in it?
Yeah. Every year, it's gumbo. So, and I'm pretty sure it's Paul Prudhomme's recipe.
I've never made gumbo, I hate to say. So what's your mom's...
Me neither.
Have you watched her make it, or do you know what her technique is?
Yeah, there's a sofrito, but in the, you know, the southern way, it's got onion, green bell pepper, and celery.
There's something about green bell pepper, which is a very divisive vegetable.
Not in sofrito, right. My brother.
I know, but I'm just saying, up north, us Yankees, people are like, oh, green peppers.
I don't put it in mine because I'm a Yankee, but like for Spanish and Mexican food, like, yeah, it's got
to
be.
I mean, the idea of a sofrito is that all of these flavors blend together to create one
harmony
vibration.
They marry.
Totally.
So you got these.
You got your sofrito going, and then you make a very dark roux.
What's the fat?
Butter, I think.
And just letting the butter and flour darken and darken.
Super dark. Long time.
And then, all right, so you got
it gives it a lot of depth, and I learned something about roux actually working on the Thanksgiving issue. The darker the roux, the less thickening power it has. Because the flour, the whatever those starches are, start to like give up their thickening power, but they're taking on a lot of flavor. So then in gumbo, there's filet, right?
Oh, yes.
Which is in those... Gotta have the filet, which is...
Feeling it. Yeah. Sorry, I'm just going to stop.
It's ground sassafras.
Mm-hmm.
That comes in at the end, the filet, right?
I think so, yeah. But that does thicken also. Yep. There's no okra in this situation.
Ooh, it's magic.
Wait, what? No filet okra?
No. Mm-mm.
Okra, another divisive vegetable.
Super divisive.
Yeah, you've made gumbo before, right?
Moss, my buddy Moss makes... Listen, the great thing about gumbo on the Super Bowl is every other year, it seems like the Super Bowl is in New Orleans. So...
As it should be.
A lot of times what we do is we take inspiration from either the host city, if they have a cuisine of note.
I like it.
Or the opposing team.
Yes.
Right? So,
usually the opposing team in Gabe's case is they're big Patriots fans. So every year, basically, the Patriots are in the Super Bowl.
We're in the Super Bowl every year.
And no one wants to make food from Boston.
But the host city, isn't it on neutral ground?
Yes. Right. But if it's in New Orleans, you've got a great cuisine, right?
Totally.
If it's in... Where are other places where they have a Super Bowl?
Now and then, LA.
Arizona, not necessarily known for its native cuisine, but you know, you could freestyle something. But let's say we're playing the Eagles, Philly cheesesteaks would be good. Yeah. If we were playing the New Orleans Saints, gumbo's coming in.
Do you ever do opposing foods? Like gumbo versus...
Chowder.
Right.
Exactly.
We're going to get to that because Gabe's friend Rick, the host, who's a magnanimous host and an amazing organizer... the way he arranges menus, you have some odd pairings.
We'll get to that. Let's get back to the gumbo.
Okay, so you got the gumbo, the big pot of gumbo.
Big pot of gumbo.
Buttery rice.
Buttery rice. The gumbo's got the smoked andouille. It's got the filet. It's a little spicy. There's shrimp. And at the very end, she puts fresh oysters in there.
Oh, wow. Ooh. Question. Yeah. Do you also put the shrimp in at the very end, or do you let them sit for a while?
No, I mean, like, but before the oyster. Yeah. So at a certain point, the shrimp go in. Those guys cook through. And then last thing... The fresh shucked oysters.
Oh, that's a deluxe gumbo.
It's really good.
That's like
Paul Prudhomme. Old school.
That's some like Commander's Palace gumbo. It's fancy.
Well, have you met Carol?
Have I met Carol? Like once maybe?
I
feel like I know Carol.
When she came in maybe and did the videos.
Yeah. I know. I mean, I know the...
Well, honestly, she does command the palace.
All right. I will say this. That was good. What I like about gumbo, and then you got the rice, and I'm not going to knock on Gabe and Rick at their place, and we'll get to this, but you can make all that stuff ahead, and it's in your big Dutch oven on the stove. The rice is ready. You can watch the whole first half, or are you eating during the game? Like, when does the eating happen?
Sometime around the end of the first quarter, because you have to...
You're hungry.
Well, you're doing your apps and your snacks.
Yeah, but on the East Coast, the game doesn't start till what, 6:35 or something?
No, later.
No, I think kickoff's like 6:32.
Every year, I'm like, it's a daytime thing.
But yeah, I think that's an important thing, to be able to actually... be sitting down on the sofa and have everything taken care of. Is there sides? Like, what do you serve?
No,
with
that's
the...
not a side. You would consider everything you ate before you ate the gumbo to be your sides.
Yeah.
Right,
that's
starters.
That's a complete meal. Yeah.
right.
I like that. I would like maybe be invited one year.
Oh,
Yeah. You know, I don't know if I can make it.
No.
But I would like to be invited.
Frank Lally would like there to be another sports fan there because he's pretty much outnumbered.
What about your husband?
Yeah.
Wow.
CLM, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Do you offer hot sauce on the side, or is this a no-fly zone on the hot sauce?
I feel like there's hot sauce around because we often have chips, salsa, and guac before. But I don't know. I don't have in my mind a memory of putting any hot sauce in my gumbo.
Should
I try that?
Yes.
Okay. Something vinegary?
Yeah. Specifically crystals.
Oh, I love
from
crystals.
Louisiana.
Totally.
Right?
Smart. Smart man. Now I know what I'm bringing over.
It's not in your bag?
I had to wait on that joke because you guys were talking, but if I could have made the hot sauce on my bag joke as it happened, it would have been funnier. But
sidebar,
the
initial note at the beginning of this podcast was try not to talk over.
All right, we got Gumbo
already
going.
Violating.
We got Gumbo on the Upper East Side. Gabe, you blew my mind last year and influenced a piece in the magazine when last football season, and you've now influenced two articles in Bon Appetit. The first one was when you and Rick made homemade ramen that was spectacular, like next level game changing ramen from like broth for 2 days, new fresh noodles, minute egg, accoutrement.
Yep.
Last year, you and Moss made cheesesteaks.
Yes, we did.
Let's talk about that.
I heard about these.
I don't know what the inspirado for that was, but we came up with it and we basically decided to do like ultimate cheesesteaks, which is, you know, everyone loves a cheesesteak. A lot of the time, you get, if you go to a spot, you're going to get like a greasy, glommy mess, and we really wanted to elevate it.
That's a bad thing? Greasy glommy mess?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's a bomb. Sometimes it's delicious. Sometimes it's a bomb, depending on how many beers you've had. It could go either way. We wanted to elevate it, so, you know, we went to, thank God for hipster butcher shops, you know, all over, you know, Brooklyn.
One on every corner.
You got, for me, you got the Meat Hook. Mm-hmm. Shout out to the Meat Hook. You got Marlo and Daughters across the street from my house. Fantastic. Shout out to Marlo and Daughters. You got White Gold if you live on the Upper East Side.
West Side.
Thank you.
You got Low Bells on the Upper East.
On the podcast.
White Gold. April Bloomfield's new place with the two butchers who are awesome.
Also, shout out to White Gold.
Fleischer's. Dixon's Farm Stand. All right, so you went right. So first of all, what kind of beef did you use?
You know, I got paid for those plugs.
So
right, cool. Sidebar.
We got a lot of sidebars.
Okay,
I can't believe you're not an editor.
All right, we wanted to do the cheesesteak. So, you know, we basically set out to get a really great cut of meat and get it prepared properly. So the tip that we got was that you want to partially freeze the meat so that you can slice it very, very thin to cook it. And you and I have had back and forth about kind of what that cut of meat is going to be and how, you know, what the fat content that you want and how pricey it needs to be. So what did you guys recommend in the book?
We went for a boneless short rib.
And that's in the February issue of Bon Appetit. In our healthy-ish issue, this was the one explicitly not healthy thing. I was like, we are putting cheesesteaks in the issue. I don't care about this healthy nonsense. They're going in for the Super Bowl.
So why did you go for the short rib?
I think it was about the fat content and the flavor.
Yep.
And like you said, it's not going to break the bank. It's easy to get.
Yep.
Yeah, you're not going to find it. And then the partially freezing was key.
Yeah, okay, cool. And short ribs are everywhere now since the 90s. And your point, partially freeze them and then slice against the grain. And what's nice about short ribs is that there's that nice fatty marbling throughout
everywhere.
The meat. It's not just like on top or something. It's in the meat. And so each little slice is imbued with fatty flavor.
Yeah, that's delicious. And as far as slicing against the grain, I think it's safe to say if you slice with the grain, it's still going to be okay.
Well, yeah, let's talk about that. Do you want to talk about that?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I just, you know, with the grain, against the grain, cause it's going to be okay. I know you're very into that stuff with brisket, with blah, blah, blah.
No, it's just, it's not me. That's common.
It's
like
good practice, but I think what Gabe is getting at, so you're cutting it really, really, really thin.
Thin, yes.
So even if it is with the grain, it's going to be a very short.
It's not going to be that noticeable. So last year, do you guys use skirt steak last year?
No, I think we used something else, and I think it was something that the butcher recommended, because I don't think that they didn't have a lot of short rib, or I was looking for a bunch of meat. It was something kind of fatty and like an off cut that they gave us.
I'm going to say it was skirt steak because I was there, and Moss was slicing it with the grain. I remember this.
Oh, geez.
Okay, whatever. It was delicious.
All right, but what was awesome, you had the griddle. You had the flat two-burner griddle that you get from Lodge or wherever.
Shout out to Lodge.
20-inch or 16-inch.
Yeah, we love them.
And so what was the order that you did all the various
things? Well, you want to get that griddle nice and seasoned with flavor, and you want to cook your onions, you know, real slow on that.
And the
peppers. And the peppers.
And the peppers. Now, personally, I don't love a cooked pepper. I really don't like bell peppers, period.
A lot of people don't.
So I usually do them in two batches. I do
Ooh,
the onions.
I like that.
Push them to the side. Yep. I do the peppers, push them to the side.
Oh, so you can like opt out of peppers?
Yes. You can opt out of peppers.
I think that's great. So they're not mixed together. Because you know what? Everyone loves caramelized onions.
Yeah, this
period.
Is a really full service operation.
Yeah.
So you did those first?
I did those first.
Okay.
And you cook them for a long time.
Yeah.
And I like to pour beer on them when I'm cooking. Yeah. I don't know why.
You know why? Because a lot of times when this is also, I think we've kind of mentioned this in the magazine, but I think we should mention it more. When you're caramelizing onions in a pan, they often sometimes get to start to burn or get crusty on the bottom, and you need to deglaze them a little bit.
Yeah.
You need some liquid in there to loosen them up.
Gotta steam it up.
Beer.
Yeah.
Beer works.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah,
cooking with beer is fantastic.
Yeah.
So yeah, just pour a little beer on them, get them going, delicious, caramelized, off to the side, and then the steak, right? The steak, you cook the steak. Now I
thinly shaved,
yeah, beautiful,
salted
and seasoned.
Seasoned, yes, yeah, important. With just with salt.
I do salt and pepper.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. I do salt and pepper. Not too heavy on the black pepper because some people are sensitive.
Mm-mm. I know. What is it with those people?
I don't know.
I keep saying, like, I like a lot of pepper. If you don't like it, obviously don't put it on.
Yeah, but
like,
I would say
our mutual friend Sam Cass does not cook with pepper.
And Nate Appleman, not a black pepper man either.
I think, I don't want to say it's unnecessary, but I do like pepper sometimes after the fact. Seared or burnt, like, salt doesn't burn, black pepper will.
Hmm.
It, you know, as just in a pan.
Well, I've never.
All right, so you're cooking the steak, a big pile of steak, the fat's bubbling.
Yep.
You got this mound of like brown, but a little bit crispy, but not like super crispy, right?
Because mm-hmm.
there's a lot of moisture in there.
Hit it with the cheese.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Well, wait, can we back up to the meat for just a sec? So you're saying cook the meat, season it, and cook it, but like just put it down and. Let it go. You've got your. How much room are we talking? Are you going in batches?
Wow.
I mean, if we were.
You know what you're doing? You're getting grilled right now.
I think if we had a really fancy flat top, we would hit it. We would like take spatulas and start whacking at it, right? To really chop it up.
Okay.
That seems to be.
Why not do that on your cast iron? You're not going to break it.
Let's give it a shot. I don't have that kind of surface area.
Yes, you do. First of all, as Carlos showed in the magazine, you take two spatulas and you push one flat like handle down, invert it, and take the other spatula to hold the meat, and the other spatula just kind of scrapes against it, and that chops up the meat.
In my industry, we call that a dope technique.
Mm. Yes. Well, it is. I learned it from these guys in the test
kitchen.
I
think that the goal is just right to get as many crispy bits as possible.
And also to tenderize the meat, to shred it a bit so it's all like one big mushy mass in there. As opposed, you don't want to be biting down and pulling out chunks of steak.
Now, are you worried about overcooking this meat?
Not really.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know.
But like when it's so thin, you cook it through. So now what I thought was interesting, so you guys, and I was watching this and I was mesmerized as you guys were doing this last year. So you have your onions and peppers to the side.
Yep.
Separated.
Yep.
Segregated over there. Then you have this big mound of meat and then you blanketed the meat with cheese, right?
Like yes.
Just, what kind of cheese were you using?
We were using, I think, what you guys have in the magazine, which is American and provolone.
Yeah.
And I think you need to just go to your supermarket deli countertop and have them slice it super thin. That's what I
correct. We did white American just
same.
For visuals yep. with the...
And provolone gives you that little extra, you know, funky umami.
Sharp provolone we asked for?
Yeah, so this is a thing. I think if you're going to the deli counter and you ask for a sharp provolone, you're going to get the right thing. If you go to the super fancy shishi cheese guy and you say sharp provolone, you might get something that's like aged and crumbling and is so salty it's going to burn your face off.
Yeah, no thank you.
That's
not what you want. You want something that melts.
Someone put that in a sandwich recently that I got at some... Oh, you know where it was? In Philadelphia when I was down there at the election and went to this cool hero place and they put aged provolone on this Italian hero because the guy was like, yeah, you should get the provolone. I'm like, all right, yeah, sure. But it was like little chipped bits of like Parmesan. It was too much.
It's like wasabi, practically.
Yeah, it was too much.
Were you just impersonating an Italian-American?
No, I'm sorry. As it happened, I was like...
You know what my last name is, right?
Oh, God. I can't pronounce it, though.
Shout out to the Italian-Americans.
Yeah, no.
Shout out to Italian-Americans everywhere.
Do you know who's also Italian?
Who?
Rappaport.
Hello.
From the town of Rappa di Porto. That means the rabbi of Porto, Italy, in the late 1500s.
That's ridiculous.
That's where the Rappaports come from. Silly. True.
Shout out to Italian Jews.
Yeah, exactly. Where do you think the word ghetto comes from?
That is just silly.
Rome, right? That was the first ghetto. Was it Rome or Venice?
I don't know if it was the first one, but there is a Jewish ghetto in Rome.
History lesson right here.
Yes. I feel like I'm on Malto Mario back in the 90s when Mario would give like history lessons while he's cooking a seven-course meal. That's impressive. All right, so you got the big mound of meat. The cheese is like oozing into it, melting.
Fantastic.
And then what did you guys do? Which I like this next step.
Basically, it's about like fresh, hot assembly right there.
Right.
A la minute, right? So let's talk about buns.
Yeah.
Right.
We gotta get to the vehicle.
Yeah.
Was this like a line cook continuous production throughout the party?
For me.
For you.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. That's my issue with Gabe in football.
I usually do something that's very labor intensive.
And actually has to be done.
And has to be assembled right there to make it delicious. And I spend a lot of time in the kitchen. We do have an open kitchen, right?
Sweating usually. But your focus is on the food, as it should be. Gabe basically... The first football he sees is like the beginning of the fourth quarter.
I was going to say, when do you time this? It takes a while.
I haven't necessarily succeeded in getting the timing right, and it's been like 20 years.
So you're shoveling.
But I'm still trying.
You're shoveling the meat and cheese into the rolls, and the rolls, and they have to.
Because you have to drink during this process, right?
Oh yeah, we'll get to that. Beer all over the griddle and drinking it.
No fancy buns. You want basic hero rolls, soft, cottony, white hero rolls.
Now, if you happen to be lucky enough to live near a Italian bakery, to get the softest roll, sort of hero roll that they have, that's fantastic. If you don't and you need to go to a supermarket or deli, what we used one year, which worked great, was Martin's has an Italian hero.
Oh wow.
Martin's potato roll has an Italian hero.
Okay.
Yep.
They're not top split, but they worked great.
But west of Pennsylvania, you're SOL on that.
Yeah, but basically...
I always say go to the plastic bin in the supermarket bakery.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Great.
Like not even the bread aisle, but that place where you get the wax paper and pull your guy up.
You want something soft and pliant, not crusty and brittle.
No.
No
ciabatta. Oh,
I do mayo in mine. Do you spread the bun?
Whatever you like, but I think the mayo doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
I think the mayo can be delicious.
Like a little mayo and hot sauce or sriracha or something.
Or my new favorite condiment, which is the Calabrian chili in oil, like the pickles.
We're going to get to that with my choice. Hey, that's me coming up with my all discussion. All right.
You can get that on Amazon.com in like really big jugs. It's fantastic.
I had that with my chicken cutlets on Saturday night.
I had chicken cutlets last night.
Or something. Something.
I love a chicken cutlet.
Panko chicken cutlet.
Yeah, Tutto Calabria.
So good.
Tutto Calabria. Yeah.
Shout out
to Tutto Calabria. You're doing a great thing over there. Great product.
All right. So you shovel it
in. Pay me.
I then choose if I want onions or peppers. And those were delicious. When I was biting into them, I'm like, good Lord, this is tasty. But you know what Carla and her test kitchen team did, Gabe, which is very smart? They had the thought of like, hey, what if you can do these ahead of time a little bit so you can then sit down and watch the game?
Dude, I saw the magazine, okay?
Yeah.
And I saw the spread.
That they wrapped it in wax paper and foil and then sliced them down the middle. So everyone gets a half instead of a full one. You
incredible
can do them ahead of time.
Presentation, professional, pro move.
Yeah.
Totally worth doing. Do them ahead, right?
Yeah.
If you keep them wrapped,
they'll stay warm.
They should be good.
Yeah.
Some of that fat will get into that bun.
I mean, that's what Brad Leone, we have a video up with Brad doing the cheesesteaks. And he said, like, when something really magic happens when they're all together by themselves in the foil.
Yeah.
Like, everything sets up.
Yep.
So there was actually like a added bonus of, you know, when the do ahead thing actually makes it better?
Yep.
It actually did. I think it depends on the size of your group. You don't want to hold them forever so that they start to get cold because, like...
Yeah, I would say this.
All that fat needs to be in a semi-liquid state,
yeah,
right?
Cheese steaks are not for 20 people. It's good for 10. You know, you can make however many of them. I do think I like the ahead of time thing. Keep them warm. And then when you're ready to serve, slice them in half. Everyone gets a half and then can come back for more.
Now, right. When you say keep them warm, what do you guys usually do in the oven? What temperature?
No, they were just staying warm in the foil,
just
being wrapped up
top.
Because the filling is all hot and then... You know, the foil keeps it together.
Great.
But eventually, you don't want to hold them so long that things get soggy.
I feel like I have no time to even talk about my main course.
The cheesesteak recipe development phase.
Carl just ignored me.
Sorry.
Yeah.
It was just a really magical phase in the kitchen.
No.
Things were popping, arguments were happening, things were getting resolved. There were cheesesteaks like every day for days and days.
Sounds incredible.
Days. It was awesome.
It was my favorite.
And then when we had the right one and then we had to test that one again and make sure it was like correct for the cross test, then it was just like, well, this is just a good one again.
It was memorable. On a similar note, but slightly different in setup, I'm a big fan of the DIY Italian Hero Bar.
Yes.
Because a couple of things. A good Italian Hero but what I like to do is there's a great place in Chelsea Market, Buonitalia.
Buonitalia. You can get your Calabrian chili oil
exactly.
there.
Exactly. So you get the Calabrian chili oil, then I'll go like, hey, give me 3/4 pound of super thinly sliced mortadella, some soprasata, maybe some copa. You have an array, maybe some prosciutto cotto, which is my favorite, the cooked ham. You set out these arrays on the little wax paper of all thinly sliced, like sort of laid out beautifully. Shredded iceberg lettuce.
Always.
I like that. Some super thinly shaved red onion, which people, they always say soak them in ice water for a bit. That takes a little of the sting out. And then some of that Calabrian chili. Mayo, you have to have the oil and vinegar.
Always.
Just cheap red wine vinegar, and then you got to have the dried oregano,
right?
And then same buns as you were talking about, Gabe, kind of squishy. And what I like about this whole setup, people can do it themselves.
Right.
And Americans love the whole DIY thing.
So you're actually, this is a strategy to put you back in front of the television.
Yeah, have it all laid out. And I like to eat at halftime because I like to be able to, as you said, have some snacks and nappies, watch the first half. And like, all right, guys, the bar is open. And everyone just gets in line and does it.
Yeah, the thing is, though, in theory, this is a great thing.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. But people do it wrong, and it drives me crazy when people assemble a bad sandwich in front of me.
What if you email everyone before a time, like a group email with instructions and maybe some photos, like, hey, guys, you want to put, like at what's the place we like in Brooklyn, the sandwich place?
Court Street Grocer.
Yeah, Court Street Grocer.
Shout out to Court Street Grocer.
And their tip about
arguably the best Italian sandwich
it's great.
Yes. In the city.
And they'll
that olive tapenade that they have, forget about
it. And they'll
it.
Do some of the fixins in between the meats, and then so they don't get all slipper side. There's also, I got schooled online and on the Twitter about, In a more traditional Italian hero, you split the bun, but you don't split it all the way. So it's open face, and you lay all the meat and the filling in the middle so that when you fold it up, it's like a horseshoe. You
have like that a horseshoe. Canoe, yeah.
And that's one way to do it as opposed to stacking it layer-wise. You know what I'm saying, Gabe?
Well,
yeah, because if you traditionally you want to make sort of like a mile high sandwich, right? You want it to be stuffed, and if you've got it coming out every side, it's a disaster.
One thing I will say that also I've learned: I love mayo. I put my mayo on there. I don't care. I get yelled at about that also by some of the more traditionalists. I do think you need more oil and vinegar than you think. You want that thing kind of wet.
I think you need some fat to sort of cut that salty meat. I think you need that, you know, you want crunch with the lettuce.
Mm-hmm.
You want that salty condiment. With the olive tapenade is great for that kind of, you know, salty umami thing. And then you've got this really sometimes really intensely salted cured meats. And I think that mayo is fantastic to be a compliment.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, you did devote an ad letter and a video to this. So
yes.
If people want to learn, I do think as a host, it is a little forward. Word to email everyone and tell them I would please request not to make a shitty sandwich in front of me.
No, you don't say that. You're just giving them tips like, hey guys.
I just stand over people.
But you want to get both sides of the bun with like the lubricant of whatever kind. You want to layer it this way. This often goes best, you know. Yeah. Use more oil and vinegar than you think. You know,
just some basic
pointers.
You know, let the people be. I would be.
I don't know.
Really?
Yeah, you spend a lot of time.
Recent events have shown us what happens when we let the people be. I think you got to show them what to do.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All
I think
right.
You got to stand over.
Well, all right. So not one more
way.
Suggestion.
That way.
you're doing it wrong, which is basically the catchphrase of working at Bon Appetit. One more thing to do it right. When Rick was working on this with you, your hero dreams, he took jardinera. In the, you know, the jarred
the pickled pepper deal, yeah.
And he kind of drained that, put it in the Cuisinart, gave it a few blips, and so it was finely chopped but not a puree, and that made a great condiment too.
Yeah.
Incredible idea. Pickly things.
You need the acid to cut through the fat of both the meat and the oil and all that stuff. All right. What about like appetizers and snacks and dips before the main event at halftime? Carla, what do you got?
Wedge. Iceberg wedge.
What?
Blue
Fantastic.
Cheese dressing.
What?
Lots of lardones of some thick cut slab bacon.
Incredible.
Love a wedge.
What am I, at the Polo Bar or something?
Well, whatever. It's delicious.
Yeah, but do you
hit that with cherry tomato or no?
Not in February or whenever the Super Bowl
but
is.
But how do you present that again? I mean, listen,
once,
you're having... You're, this,
again,
is such, this is such an Upper East Side Super Bowl.
Oh, stop. They're not... It's not like, the butler's coming in with your wedge salad. But like,
if
I'm sitting on the couch with food on my lap, it better be on a porcelain plate because otherwise I'm going to dump it all over the place.
Yeah, but I don't want to have a knife and fork on my lap sitting on the sofa. That's, well, yeah.
So this begs the question. This begs the question with the wedge, right? Do you serve it as a nice slab of wedge or do you chop it for your guests?
We serve it as a wedge. Actually,
right.
What Carol Lolly does is she puts it down some kind of platter where it's like wedge.
Individual wedges.
Dressing.
Do you serve that with the Dom or the Krug?
You know, usually if Frank is choosing the beverages, he's going to offer everybody a nut brown ale. Guaranteed. You walk in the door and it's like, what do you want to drink? I got the nut brown. And we're like, but why? And has it been there since 1987?
Okay, all right.
You gotta bring your own beer.
I do love a wedge. I think it's a little high maintenance for Super Bowl, but if that's what Carol likes.
Different strokes for different folks.
God bless Carol.
I think it sounds delicious, and the presentation on that big platter is probably great.
Yeah,
it's
pretty.
You could also stand. There's not everybody is watching the game. Like some people might, if you're doing a big buffet, some people might stand around that buffet and like eat.
All right, Gabe, what do you got?
I would take umbrage with the porcelain though. I couldn't deal with the cleanup. I just couldn't deal with it. It would have to be some kind of heavy paper bowl.
Yeah.
It would just have to be.
So what's on the coffee table?
We like to do pimento cheese.
Yeah,
it's a very special occasion thing, right? Our buddy Jonathan is a professor at Clemson. Shout out to the Clemson Tigers, national champs. Is a professor at Clemson and has lived down there for a decade or more and has taken up some interest in Southern traditions, pimento cheese being one, right? So he has a recipe for that, and it's fantastic, and we make it, and we serve it with a big bowl of, you know, mini pretzels.
Yeah.
Bachmann, I think, is the brand you're looking for.
Yeah, sure.
In the one-pound bag.
Yeah.
Oh, I could do a whole podcast on pretzels.
Yeah, so it's people go nuts for it. People go absolutely crazy for it. Pimento cheese spread, a nice bowl of it with a big bowl of pretzels.
Yeah, and
perfect.
I think I love it. What I like about pimento cheese...
Great beer snack.
It packs a punch. It's got a lot of flavor, but it's not like so heavy or overwhelming. I like that with some nice crudité on the side also. Like if I want to dip a good...
I knew you were going
to... I know. I love crudité. I always get a hard time. Me and my Pinot Grigio and crudité. But I like something... I want something crisp and fresh at the table because I know I'm having those cheese steaks.
Some radishes with cold butter with that?
Yeah, sure. But I know I'm having cheese steaks and all the other stuff to come. I just want something a little fresh. And also, I've said this before because I'm a don't fill up on the bread sort of guy. I don't want to be stuffed by the time halftime happens. I don't want to be wasted and stuff. I want to be hungry for those cheesesteaks. That's fair enough, right?
Right.
Yeah. Don't hit me with the nachos and 17 different dips, and everyone brings a bunch of stuff. Oh, one last thing, Jay. It's like, yeah, if you're running the show, then you're running the show. I when people are like, oh, what can I bring? I'm like, you can bring some beer, or you can bring a bottle of whatever you want to drink.
Bring a bag of ice. Yeah.
But like,
I'm not interested in your idea of crudité.
Yeah,
I'm commanding the crudité.
Exactly. Thank you.
Right.
I think if Andrew Knowlton were here, he would allow for celery sticks.
Yeah. Oh, with the pimento.
With the pimento. It's
perfect. That's all I need. All right. We're eating a lot. It's Sunday night on the East Coast, 6:30 p.m. We're going to be drinking, right?
All day.
All day. Gabe, let's talk.
Arguably, all of the pregame stuff is as good as the game itself.
Right.
I love, for instance, ESPN, Sunday Morning Countdown. Fantastic. Shout out to Chris Berman retiring.
Yeah.
It's over for him, or semi-retirement, whatever. Love Chris Berman. Just love the Schwamm.
And you know what you also love, Gabe? You love Bloody Marys.
We take them seriously.
All right,
and again, Rick, the Rick of Rick's Picks.
And Rick's Pick is a artisanal pickle company that Rick started like back in the day, pickle guy in Brooklyn. And, and so what's your Bloody
Still
Mary technique? Because I do think that's a classic thing, especially on the West Coast where the Super Bowl starts 3 hours earlier.
They get to day drink and watch the game. We day drink.
And they get to be home by like 9 o'clock and in bed.
I know. And we're day drinking and then it's like late at night.
Oh, yep. God.
Yep. The Bloody Mary. I think, you know, I'm going to talk about his recipe for a second. And he does some unconventional things. He uses fresh horseradish as opposed to pickled or jarred.
Okay.
He takes a big horseradish root and shaves it into the mix. He uses bone broth or beef bouillon in the broth itself,
which is like a bloody bowl, correct? Right. That's a drink.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound that weird.
Yeah.
It's actually delicious. His
umami.
Mix. Yeah. Talk about that. He does something interesting with the, we all think that tomato juice out of a jar or a can is too thick. None of us like that.
Interesting.
So he actually strains the solids out of the tomato juice several times with fine sieves.
Wait, he buys canned tomato juice like Sacramento and then strains it? Wow.
That's what we have to work with.
Wow. That's fascinating.
Yeah. He actually strains it several times to get as much liquid.
Yeah.
As just beautiful red tomato liquid.
Wow.
And that becomes the basis for the drink.
Wow.
What else is he putting there? Garlic. He puts garlic in there with the beef stock.
Garlic salt or actual?
Actual garlic.
Jesus.
Raw? Wow.
Not too much. I think it's raw. It could be pickled.
What about,
pickled garlic.
Or maybe it's like the jar. What about, I have to have celery seed or celery salt in my bloody.
He doesn't touch it.
Oh, well.
He doesn't touch it.
I love it.
Yeah, I got
it. Personally, I love it. If you're going to go with a pre-made product, the Tabasco brand Okay.
A Bloody Mary mix?
A Bloody Mary mix is the best available on the shelf.
Not Mr. and Mrs. T's?
The Tabasco brand.
Wow.
If you can find it, it looks like a giant bottle of Tabasco.
Awesome. That's good already.
Awesome labeling, like incredible packaging. And it has that celery note.
Yeah, yeah.
In spades. And it is a fantastic shelf product.
I like Mr. and Mrs. T's because I feel like I get my sodium supply for
the
entire week.
Too much time on airplanes, Adam. By
I know.
That is that, what I drink on an airplane.
I get off the plane and my ankles are swollen. All right, Gabe, so you got daytime Bloody Marys going for pregame. Now, you had some interesting...
We should talk about the accoutrement real quick. I think pickles are great. Dilly beans. Mm-hmm. Rick's Picks Smokra product, which is pickled okra, which is one way that I do like my okra.
I like okra.
I just say, Rick better be sponsoring this episode. So I want to check in the mail tomorrow.
Do you do the same... You could set that up as a Bloody Mary bar.
That's the Bloody Mary bar.
Right.
Yeah. Right?
And then you also stand over people and tell them.
Yes. You're doing it wrong.
You're doing it wrong.
Mozzarella sticks on the Bloody Mary bar.
What?
That's
for kids?
That's a thing.
Oh,
no,
stop.
Like people put mozzarella sticks in their
the
Bloody
whole Bloody Mary.
Mary
bar thing has gotten out of control at some point. I don't need like the bacon in my Bloody Mary, for
I know,
instance.
That's
I was
going to
say.
Thing.
I was going to say bacon.
No.
That's fantastic.
People love it.
Beef jerky.
Yes.
Why not?
No.
I would definitely put beef jerky.
I draw the line at shrimp.
Because you're having, don't stop hitting the table, Gabe. Because you're having cheese steaks in a couple hours. You don't need, all you need is a celery stalk, a nice leafy celery stalk. That's classic.
That's all you need.
Yeah. All right, Gabe. So, you know, in the second half of this podcast, I've talked to Delaney and Brad about beer at the Super Bowl, and they're beer, you know, enthusiasts, and they think that's all you drink at the Super Bowl itself. You had some other thoughts and suggestions, Gabe, about maybe some batch cocktails or some spritzes even.
Well, the Aperol Spritz, which came into popularity in the States, I want to say like 2 or 3 years ago.
No, I would say like 10 years ago.
No, where it became a thing.
Where it became like a thing where you can get it at every restaurant and bar. It was about 3 years ago, and I remember when Batali started running around, you know, with a bottle of Aperol everywhere and making it happen.
Yeah.
Okay?
I'm going to say it's like 6 years ago.
Okay, whatever.
All right.
It could have been 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Splitting hairs. There's a bunch of different spritzes that you can do, right? I don't know all of them. Do you know any?
I know a few.
Yeah?
I love an Americano, which is not dissimilar from Aperol Spritz, which is just equal parts of Campari, sweet vermouth, and then topped off with seltzer.
Yep.
Highball, not too alcoholic.
Not too boozy.
But it is a little sweet, so you got to be careful. Too many of those, you're going to have a vicious hangover.
That's my feeling with I love a spritz, as I've told you. Spritz up anything, I think it's better. Anything on ice with club soda is better. But I do think, A, sometimes it can go sweet based on the amount of Aperol or Campari you have in there. And I think the booziness, Gabe, you had mentioned paper planes, which you said is bourbon, Aperol, Amaro, and lemon.
It's an incredible drink.
It's
and
really
there
good.
There are lots of different variations on this drink. Lots of different restaurants make different variations on it. Cafe Tosca has one that you guys actually published a recipe when you did your review of them a couple years ago. It's basic. It's so easy to make because it's equal parts bourbon, Aperol. In my recipe, we use Amaro Nonino, which I just think is delicious on its own with ice, and an equal part of fresh lemon juice.
And
but
then
that's a shake and drink, isn't it?
No.
You can shake it or stir it.
But can you just batch that? And then
you can batch the hell out of it.
Yeah. And then when it's time for me to make, so I'm going to take some of that.
Batch is back, baby.
I myself put it on ice and spritz it up with club soda. Is that how you would spritz it?
Whatever.
Well, no, because you don't want to put the club soda in before time, because then by the time I get it, it's flat.
Yeah. I mean,
you spritz to order.
It's not a spritz.
You just said it was a spritz.
No, dude,
no,
it's a
cocktail.
It's
not a spritz. You can make it a spritz.
But why wouldn't you spritz it up?
I don't know. I mean, it sounds crazy.
This comes back to, listen, dude, those of us who don't work in the record industry actually have to be at work on time Monday morning. We don't roll into the office at 11:15 a.m.
Let's just talk about the cocktail for a second.
No, so I'm saying if I have a cocktail like that, I will be passed out by halftime. But if I cut it with club soda, it becomes a more manageable cocktail.
Can we talk
right?
about the cocktails that you can have and not be passed out?
Yeah, sure.
At halftime?
Yeah, like
no, you.
Well, me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Budweiser.
Yeah.
I don't think it's about the paper plane. I think that's what happens to you.
You're trying to say I'm a lightweight.
A little bit.
Big time.
I mean, you're just talking about making a spritz.
How about this? Instead of making a spritz.
How about a nice Pinot? How about a nice Pinot Grigio spritz,
Adam?
And people, I'm tired of people making fun of Pinot Grigio. Like, oh, do you want some Pinot Grigio? I'm like, yes, I would like some Pinot Grigio because it's cold, it's crisp, and it's refreshing.
Right.
Why? Stop making fun of Pinot Grigio.
Okay, then stop schooling people on how to make a sandwich at your party. The same.
No, it's not the same because you can either have a good sandwich or a bad sandwich. that's a difference. I'm trying to increase the enjoyability of the sandwich. Just open a bottle of
Adam, let's move on to a more solution-oriented path.
Sure, sure.
Why not just drink a little 2-ounce cocktail? Why do you have to spritz it up?
Because you're done.
What I want to do is I want to shake it up. I want to serve it to you in a nice little highball glass. Okay, 2 ounces.
No, two.
It'll be gone too fast.
It's not 2 ounces.
I want to hit it with a little sprig of fresh basil.
Oh, God.
I like that.
First of all, fresh basil in February doesn't make sense. Second of all, 2 ounces is, you need more than 2 ounces in a highball. The definition of a highball is something cut with club soda, first of all, Gabe. That is a highball. Like a whiskey soda is a highball. A vodka soda is a highball.
Can I take us to a solution?
Yeah. Apparently, because we're not having one.
We're
so
just going to pivot now. I think that the whole category of drinks in the sour category is like a great idea because they have some citrus juice in there. They're not crazy alcoholic. Batch them to high heaven. I think that a paper plane is a sour, right?
Because
got that. And if you want to throw a splash of seltzer in there, go for it.
Couple other thoughts. In terms of like one thing about having a Super Bowl party is you're having a lot of people at your house on a Sunday. It's a work day. It needs to be functional. I think a couple of thoughts. I am all in favor of paper or plastic everything. Paper plates, red Solo cups, everything should be able to go into a recycling garbage bag at the end of it.
Carol Lolly is like already, she's signing up for Twitter so she can tweet at you that she doesn't like that.
You're at your mom's house on the Upper East Side. So Carol Lolly doesn't count. But Gabe, are you with me on that one? Like you should be doing the dishwasher.
Everything should have a Patriots logo on it.
Yeah.
100%.
But I think you should.
Everything should have Pat Patriana, from the cups to the napkins, cocktail napkins, the plates, everything should be Patriots. All the
time. That too. And listen, especially if you have kids there, I don't need cocktail glasses. I've never been anywhere where Marlon Rappaport has not knocked over a glass, you know? So like, I don't want to be cleaning up glass. I don't want to be doing dishes. I like the cups. I also like, which we talked about before, Gabe, is that if with beer, for those of who are drinking the beer,
those of us who drink it on ice, Adam.
Yes, like me. Having the cooler inside the house, like your Coleman cooler or whatever your big cooler, on like a beach blanket to catch any sort of drippings. So people don't have to be going back and forth to the fridge. They just walk to the cooler in the corner of the living room, grab a cold one, and call it a day.
Definitely keep your drinks out of the kitchen.
Yes.
Right? However you need to do that.
Because you know who is in the kitchen? Gabe's in the kitchen.
Yeah. Right.
You definitely don't want a lot of traffic, people coming in and out of there for drinks.
Good point.
So you want to have your cooler and or, if you like this, the big stainless steel tub that people like. Right?
Oh, yeah.
You guys have probably featured a lot of those in the magazine. Mm-hmm. Looks beautiful, loaded with beer and bottles of wine, lots of ice, great presentation.
It says
party, people want a party, they want a drink, grab a cold one.
Totally.
Keep it moving.
It's like we're hanging out at Ina Garten's in the Hamptons. She's got some bottles of Pinot Grigio in there, some Aperol.
Pinot Grigio.
She probably doesn't have koozies flying around, but we're having koozies. For sure.
That's smart, too. You don't need a coaster if you've got a beer koozie.
Yeah, I want no glasses. I want cans. I want beer koozies. And stay out of the kitchen because I think the kitchen's a no-fly zone.
If you have access to any kind of outdoor space in your domicile, that's a great place to put the drinks.
Yes.
Make people just go outside. Grab a drink. I did that at Christmas. It was great. Got them outside.
There's always those people. Gabe's in the kitchen making the cheesesteaks, and there's frying, there's oil, and there's heat, and someone's like, "Hey man, what's going on? Like, what are you making?"
What are you doing?
And you're just like, not now. Get out of here. Go grab a beer in the living room, in the cooler over there in the corner. I'm making this.
That's right.
Carla, and we're gonna wrap up soon. We're in the fourth quarter right now. We're approaching the 2-minute drive.
We're in the fourth quarter. I'm already on the FDR heading home.
Yeah, you're not staying for the whole game.
No way.
Neither are your kids.
It's like a tale of two halves, right?
Yeah.
In the second half. I feel like the first half was really strong for me. In the second half, I'm kind of like, haven't really scored yet. All right, let's see if we can bring it home.
Dessert.
I love dessert at the Super Bowl.
No.
Crickets.
Yeah.
We're not doing it.
So if there was a plate of brownies there, you would be like, uh-uh.
What kind of brownies?
Delicious chocolate brownies with the shiny kind of crackly top on them.
I want more salty, crispy, salty, crispy, salty, crispy, another drink, salty, and, crispy.
Okay, but this is a family affair, right? There's kids running around. You think they're going to dessert?
You have to do it for the kids. I believe that. I think cookies is a thing. I don't think what you want to do for dessert, personally, Gabe, is have a thing where you've got to get out the ice cream and the whipped cream and bowls and that. Like, just like a plate of awesome cookies or brownies.
Yeah.
I think it's fine.
Lemon bars, if you're into that.
Yeah.
Sometimes
lemon bars.
Sure.
Oh, that's not a Super Bowl dessert.
Whatever.
What about magic bars?
What are
Remember magic bars?
No.
With all the coconut and the chocolate.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And the caramel.
Yeah. Those are good. That's
people
like
to make pies. See, I'm not a big pie guy. People are super into making pies. They're into bringing pies. That's they're like, hey, I brought a pie. No, and everybody goes, ooh, no,
but
that's pie.
But the pie is usually the kind of pie that I was talking about, like a chocolate pudding pie with whipped cream on top, a press-in crust, some old school, like icebox pie.
Boston cream.
Mm, I like Boston cream. But that's Thanksgiving. Pies are Thanksgiving. Again, you then got to get the forks. You got to get the plates out, a separate set of forks and plates. We're not doing pies.
Fine. Don't do pies.
I think have another drink. Yes. Skip it.
Yeah.
Have another drink. Break out the Yamazaki or something classy.
Ooh, the fancy.
For the victory.
The scotch or the
and
fancy
And the victory
bourbon.
Dance.
Oh, yes.
Always set to I Want to See the Bright Lights Tonight by Richard and Linda Thompson.
Yeah, how did you...
That's the victory dance.
How did you guys...
I Want to See the Bright Light... You Google this.
Yeah, it is.
I Want to See the Bright Lights Tonight by Richard and Linda Thompson. Fantastic song, and it just says win.
Win. But if your team loses, do you still play that and feel like a winner?
You don't play.
You don't
play the song.
No. You just go home and you're like, oh my God, it's 11:45.
Do you go to your bed and let themselves out?
Yeah. And you're like, my kid is waking up tomorrow at 6:30 to go to school. And you're like, I'm going to shoot myself.
In the rare occasion that the Patriots lose a Super Bowl.
you mean the two times against the Giants?
In those occasions, all I do is think about what work is going to be like tomorrow and how I'm going to have to hear it from people like Adam.
Right. Do you ever stay home on Monday?
It's happened.
Out of pure grief. Because by Tuesday, you're not going to get as much heat.
And the other thing I want to say about the whole Super Bowl meal is it should be delicious. It should be super fun. I think your idea with the cheesesteaks of doing everything ahead, the gumbo, I think that the do ahead for the enjoyment of the game is something that I haven't yet mastered and something that we should all
strive for.
Those of us that are tuned into this podcast, the millions.
Don't joke.
And thousands of us that are tuning into this, you know, have fun with it. Don't do what I've done and spend your entire day in the kitchen because it won't be as delicious and the win won't be as delicious and the loss will be
so much harder.
So much harder.
All right, guys, let's bring it in. High fives. All right. All right.
Shout out to the Super Bowl.
Carl Lally Music. Gabe Tesserero.
It's cool, man.
Gabe T, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much, guys.
All right.
All right, that was Carla and Gabe T. Next up, Alex Delaney and Brad Leone talking craft beer. All right, it's January 18th, and we are recording a podcast about what beer to drink during the Super Bowl. And I just found out, Delaney, that you're not drinking this month, like at all.
Sad, but unfortunately true news.
And yet you're doing a podcast of telling people what beer to drink.
Torture. Seems a little contradictory. But 18 days. I feel actually great.
Oh, stop.
Good for you.
Shouldn't he be disqualified from doing this podcast, Brad?
So. I told him if it's work, it doesn't count.
What does that mean? Oh, he's allowed to drink.
Yeah, man. It's a little, you gotta...
Brad's peer pressuring me into cracking.
I'm
right
good
now.
At that.
I see you have some selects you brought, so let's get down to it. Super Bowl, we've already talked on this podcast about how I think it's the ultimate eating holiday of the year. Do you guys kind of view this as the ultimate drinking day, or is this more just kind of like a nice day to have some beers?
Well, for me, like it goes hand in hand. So it's like, you know, it's not like a fancy sit-down dinner for the most part. You know, it's like a, you know, you're eating cheesesteaks, hopefully, or some chicken wings, or, you know, whatever kind of finger food you have, usually kind of greasy, kind of fun like that. So you want something that can kind of cut that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not looking for this big, heavy beer all the time, but, you know, it's like what you're drinking is kind of, it can be a celebration. I think you need a variety. You know, we'll get into that.
For the record, I love the Super Bowl. I love drinking beer on the Super Bowl. And it's the one day where if I have people over to my apartment, I can look someone in the eye and say, you're drinking beer, put down the wine. This is a beer holiday. I'll keep a bottle of wine in the fridge on reserve, but you should have a beer in hand at almost every point.
Okay, so the question is, what kind of beers? Brad, so what are you serving?
All right, so I'm going to have a fridge full of like just some classic lighter beers, you know, like some. I have brought a little of that Narragansett lager.
You can say lager if you want.
Lager.
I mean, like that's a 16-ounce can.
Yep. And then just like Pilsner, something that's going to be crisp, refreshing, kind of easy to drink, you know. And let's not face it, it's Super Bowl Sunday. We all got to go to work the next day.
Yeah, unfortunately.
So, you know, you don't want to be, you know, having a hangover in the third quarter, you know.
For sure. But that's the pro move is having the base beer that you know everyone's going to enjoy.
The base beer.
When you say Pilsner, that's a pretty broad term. Like what kind of Pilsner?
Pilsner. What is something that, yeah, so it's usually a low alcohol. It's kind of, you know, malty, usually around 5% alcohol.
But I'm saying, is there a brand in particular you want to be serving?
I like something that's very, I mean, that's nationally available, that Victory Prima Pils.
Victory's awesome.
Yeah. Super clean pills in there. You can get it, you know, at just about everywhere. Depending on where you're living, everywhere is going to have their own little brewery that's cranking out something. And if they're making a good pills, get that, you know. It goes really well with food. Like I said, low alcohol. And it's crisp and refreshing.
When you say low alcohol relative to what? What do you
like
about
ABV?
What?
I want like 4.5, 5,
which is what your typical American mass-produced canned beer, exactly.
Which is what beer originally, when it was, you know, made, it was never, you know, it was usually a pretty low. You drink two and go back to work in the field kind of thing, you know. And
Brad, what are you doing on your lunch break? Did Bon App? You're like
drinking beer,
yeah. And whereas like an IPA is what?
I mean, they can get up to around 6, 7.5, up to 10. You know, they make the double IPAs, imperial IPAs, or whatever. Yeah. I never understood the difference, double and imperial.
Mostly alcohol.
Yeah.
But yeah, and nowadays, like, if someone brings an IPA to the Super Bowl party, it's probably going to be in between 6.5, 7%.
Right.
But a bud is like 4.2%, something like that. So that's what, if you want to get a beer for everyone to drink continuously throughout the game, get something in the style of a Budweiser.
All about the low alcohol.
Well, I feel like you're taunting me. You've got this bottle there, and like you're not offering to open it or anything.
It would be my honor.
You got to open it. Here we go, right by the microphone. I want to hear the... Oh, that was nicely done.
That's torture to me.
Delaney, you looking at that?
I'm smelling
how
it,
good
man.
Does it
I can smell
so,
it.
How would you, Delaney, define the difference between a lager or a lager, as Brad likes to say, and a pilsner?
Sure. A pilsner is actually a type of lager. The main distinction that people make is between a lager and an ale.
Hmm.
So it's really just the difference in the way that it's fermented. With lagers, typically you're going to get a crisper, smoother taste because it's fermented at a lower temperature, while an ale is fermented at about room temperature, maybe a little bit higher, in between 65, 70 degrees. But yeah, a lager is the kind of pound about 6 of them and not even think about it. It's about just drinking.
Just as long as you guys are Ubering home, okay?
Yes,
Uber
exactly.
Or Juno or Lyft, that's fine. If you're going to pound 6.
Absolutely.
Will you, all right, so Brad, at the Super Bowl, though, will you like to move through a progression of beers? Will you stick with just one beer the whole night?
So, no. See, well, I'm glad you asked that. So, like, my strategy is, like, you know, you can have your base beer.
Yeah.
And then I like to have a couple celebration beers.
Wait, you said that before, celebration. What does that mean, celebration
when
beer?
When my team's winning.
Uh-huh.
Okay, we're going into the second half up. And, you know,
who is your team?
Well, I'm the Giants fan. I was born into it. Yeah, they didn't show up. But I'm gonna go for the Packers.
Okay. All right. So let's say the Pack make it. By the time you listen to this podcast, you'll know. So if Rodgers is out there slinging it, touchdown, doing his thing, and you're feeling good, what will you then open up?
All right, it's halftime. We're going in with a lead. Then I'm cracking open that nice little that Creek that I've been saving or something, which is a cherry beer. It's
called Creek?
Creek, right?
That's K-R-I-E-K.
Oh, I thought Creek. it was not like, by the Creek.
Not like the Babbling Brook.
Or like that's where I break out the big IPA or something. Something that has that little more firepower to it. Big flavor. You don't want to drink it all night, but, you know, you break open the bottle. Because, you know, as us beer guys have, we have a little cellar going at home. You know, you get excited. So you get a couple of your beers stowed away.
Do you guys have like a selection of beers at temperature, Delaney? You live in New York City, so you can't have much space.
I mean, budget permitting.
Yeah.
So my cellar is a very small nook that is about 7 feet off the ground on my stairs up to my room. And I keep most of my beers up there, but in the fridge at any certain time.
What do you do in the summertime if the apartment gets hot when you guys aren't around, the AC's not on?
I'll move as many as I can to the fridge without causing a confrontation with the roommate.
Keep that AC on all the time.
Yeah, exactly. But mostly hoppy beers you always want to keep in the fridge. So if I have IPAs, they'll
depends
always be
on
the
beer.
Fridge.
That's good information.
Saisons, stouts, I'll keep them up in the nook or the cellar.
Right.
Well, let me ask you this, though. So let's say your team's doing well. You break out your quote-unquote celebration beer. I'm of the school that if you're having a bunch of people over to your apartment, you want to clean up to be easy. You set out some solo cups. But if you're having a nice beer, do you want a nice glass to go with it? Is that true?
I mean, I'm not drinking it out of a solo cup. I mean, I'm not above that.
Yeah. But no, you're not.
You know, if we're at home, you know, there's no reason to. We got glasses.
And will you be sharing this celebration beer?
With a select few who will appreciate it. You know, it's not going to the person who's
not
drinking Pinot Grigio, you know?
This is my thing. The way I pour beer when I'm in my apartment, when I invite people over, I'm not about exclusivity with the beers. Like, if you want to try the beer, you're getting a pour of the beer.
Maybe
in what though?
I have a pretty stocked glassware cabinet at my apartment, but I'd say you'd probably get it in a glass of some variety.
We'll let you taste it.
Yeah. But you don't want to be the guy that's, you know, sitting in the corner while everyone else is, like, cheering, yeah, and you're sitting there sipping your rare little imperial stout.
No one likes
stout.
A beer snob.
No one, no. Come on.
Yeah. It's supposed to be shared.
Yeah, you share.
But you know, my pour might be a little heavier than the people I'm sharing with.
Have you ever done, like, have you ever gotten, like, the quarter keg or anything for a Super Bowl party?
Not a bad idea.
Yeah.
I haven't.
Not for a Super Bowl party, but I have.
You have had a keg beer before.
A sixtel, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
A what? What did you say?
A sixtel.
What does that mean?
So a keg as we think of it, right?
Yeah.
Like
it's a half
you do a
keg
stead on, yeah, it's a half keg. A sixtel is a third of a half, so 1/6 of a keg.
Oh wow.
It's like the tall little
tall
cylinders.
Cylindrical.
Oh, well I'm talking the quarter kegs or the short squat ones.
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, but I guess a sixtel came along after I was in college.
There you go.
A lot of a lot of bars, when they have a craft beer, like a real nice beer, yeah, or something, it'll usually be a sixtel.
Yeah.
That's a good question, actually. So are there places like in New York City or other cities where one can go get a quote-unquote sixtel of a beer that you approve of?
Yeah, absolutely. So the way most breweries in New York City operate is that they go through a distribution company. So if you contact the distribution company and say, hey, I'm looking for this kind of beer, what do you have in from the breweries that you rep? Say I'm looking for an other half session IPA. And they're like, actually, maybe other half doesn't have a distribution company. But say they did. They'd say, hey, you know, we have this, this, and this. We'll have this at this date. You can schedule to either pick it up or, if you happen to own a bar, they'll drop it off to you. But most likely pick it up and have it for the party.
All right, well, let's say you do this, because this intrigues me, because I do think for people who throw a big party and have 20 people there or something, managing the crowds and the trash and all that stuff is something you always got to deal with. How would you get that keg or to temperature and keep it at the temperature you like for a beer like this? Maybe you don't want it ice cold, or I don't know. What would you do?
Right in the backyard, right on the fire escape. Hopefully it's cold. You know, it's what, February?
It is February, yeah, so Super Bowl.
Yeah, so hopefully it's cold out, but you never know these days.
But would you not, let me ask you a question, in terms of drinking a beer, like one of these craft beers that you guys like, you might not want that as ice cold as like a Miller Lite or something where the keg's just sitting there in ice the entire time in a trash can. So,
well, see, the way I feel about that is I want it cold because I'm not going to be consuming it all in 30 seconds. And by the time I get, you know, a drink a quarter, it's going to, my hand's on it, it's in the room, it's going to hit its peak temperature right when I want it. So I prefer.
Maybe you got the fireplace going.
Got the nice vibe going. Yeah. I like it cold. It's only going to warm up. What you were saying too with the sixtels, I think a great move is, especially if you have a brewery or something a place that you really like that has really great beers, go and you want to cut back on dishes and cans and stuff like that. Bring some growlers and they'll fill up, you know, it's like a 64 ounce glass growler.
Yep.
And you can go and get a bunch of those filled up. Get a bunch of different kinds if you want. Or
that's a good idea.
Yeah. And then you can just have, you know, some glasses and you don't have to, you know, it's just a little easier.
Yeah. One less thing to deal with.
Exactly.
You have a ginormous can over there, Brad. What's going on with that?
This big boy?
Yeah.
So that is...
Go ahead and tell us about that, Delaney, since you won't be drinking it.
I'll tell what you guys drink. So that's Juicy Banger IPA. It's from a brewery in Denver called Station 26, and it is packaged in a crowler, which is not to be confused with a growler. Essentially the same thing. You get a big portion of beer, but a crowler is... I mean, it looks almost like a tall boy. It has 32 ounces of beer.
A really fat tall boy.
It's a lineman.
Yeah, exactly.
And this one's like a golden silver wrapped with like kind of new wavy poppy wallpaper, it looks like.
Yeah, and this is a 32 ounce, and this is an IPA. It's clocking in at 7.4.
Wow,
yeah.
7.4.
So it's got a little horsepower to it.
Yeah.
But as I remember when we were out in Denver drinking it, it was kind of more New England-y, right? It was a little cloudy. A little juicy.
Definitely juicy.
Wait. What do you mean? What does New England mean when it comes to beer?
So there's like West Coast style IPAs and then like the East Coast, they call them like New England styles, which tend to be a little more cloudy. What does that come from being unfiltered or just...
So real quick, there's three kind of styles of IPA. You have the classic East Coast, which when you think of that, it's like a Dogfish Head 60 minute.
Okay.
Little more malty.
Right.
Definitely bitter. Then you have a West Coast, which is like, think of a Stone IPA.
Yeah, like a Rogue or something.
Super tropical, citrusy hop notes, but still very clear and clean. And then you have this new kind of IPA.
My favorite.
Brad's on that bandwagon, as am I, that people are referring to as a New England IPA. And it's an unfiltered, super perishable IPA. So the hot, all the hop flavor is crazy intense, super juicy and fruity. But after about a month, it starts to fade.
It starts
so
to
people go crazy, and you know they buy them all up and they drink them and they keep going out to the brewery.
Not for the cellar.
Do they last longer in a can than bottle because of the light and that sort of stuff?
That is correct.
Mm, how you like that? Can I open this one?
Sure,
all right, here
can.
We go. Here we go. Let's get it.
Ooh, ooh
yes. You know what's awesome? I'm gonna get the pouring. Let's get the pouring.
That's nice.
That's nice. Ooh,
oh, that's a
yes.
beautiful thing.
All right, so this one, well, it's fragrant.
Yeah.
You can
and that's all
it's
that.
Quite a nose. Do we say nose in the beer business, or do you
absolutely.
Say something?
Yeah?
Nose, aroma, whatever you want to say.
Cheers.
Cheers. I like that.
Oh, yeah. Big time. Big nose.
Ooh, wow. That's stings the nostrils.
You don't want to drink that the whole game.
I've made like a Anchorman joke on every third podcast, I think.
It's appropriate.
It's appreciated.
You know, you don't want to drink it the whole night.
I think it would be challenging, though, also, if you're eating a lot.
Right.
That's my biggest challenge with juicy, meaty beers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like I'm eating a lot of other juicy, meaty things.
Right.
Like, you know, that's where I find it could be tough. You really got to settle into the beer. And
celebration
maybe,
beer.
Celebration beer, but in lieu of, or you're going to forego some of the wings and the cheesesteaks, you know, like I'm going to concentrate on the beer.
Right. When an event like the Super Bowl, I think this, ties in real well, like, at the end. You know, it's almost like you have one glass. It's like your dessert, little nightcap.
Or it's like
beer.
Your scotch. Your it's scotch your, at
yeah,
the
it,
end.
It's your scotch of the beer.
IPA on the rocks, minus the rock. I agree, though. I think I like eating spicy food when it's the Super Bowl. You know, I want my buffalo wings. I want my, shameless plug here, Bon Appetit buffalo wing popcorn.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
I want some spice. So I also like a little bit of tartness in a beer. So I might, and Brad's on this wave too, I might go for a Goza, which is like a tart, slightly sour,
a little salty,
low ABV beer that kind of just like brings you back to life.
Yeah, good with food. Yeah, that first beer we had, which was the Pilsner.
Yeah.
That you would much rather eat with some Super Bowl food than this monster.
Yeah, yeah. No, this monster stands alone. Before we wrap up, in terms of getting your Super Bowl party going, we often talk about like at Thanksgiving to like let people know what to bring, and you tell them exactly what kind of wine to bring so it goes with the meal. Do you invite your sort of friends, your beer friends over and ask them to bring certain types of beer, or ask them at least to bring a six pack, or, you know, how does that work?
Absolutely.
I always say, hey, bring a mixed pack or bring whatever you're into, because I mean, let's face it, I'm going to cover my interests on my own.
You Brad's know? Looking out
you're
for himself.
You're going to be
I. You know, I mean, I'll share, but I'm going to make sure I'm drinking what I want to drink, and I'm willing to share it with everyone, but I'm not going to rely on, you know, Joe to bring what I want to drink, you know?
Yeah.
You're looking out for yourself.
Yeah, well, we can word that a little bit.
Yeah. What about your wife? Is she on the same page with you when it comes to beer?
Loves the beer, yeah.
Same taste as you?
Yeah, yeah. She tends to like more of like a pale ale.
Uh-huh.
But she can get in. I mean, she can drink them.
Yeah.
She can drink the big IPAs.
Yes.
Not as well as me, thank God. But she likes to drink. And
Delaney, I've noticed on your Instagram account, what's your Instagram handle again?
It is at Alex, like you would expect it to be spelled, _ Delaney, DELANY.
And I will just mention your girlfriend, Maud, because you certainly include her in your Instagram stories enough. She
yes.
seems to be with you all the time when you're hitting up these various breweries every weekend.
Yeah.
What sort of beer drinker is she? And are you guys on the same page taste-wise?
We are on the same page taste-wise, almost. She's on the same page as I am in... You know, in the light of she likes to try tons of stuff. She's always trying to try something new. She's more on the IPA side of things, less on the sour, funky stuff.
Mm.
But she's been known to drink an IPA or three.
All right. Okay, before we go, because you shouldn't be drinking if you're not eating, what are you looking forward to most to eat on Super Bowl Sunday?
Oh, Super Bowl Sunday, I'm looking for the complete spread of dips. Give me like a really, really solid... 5 or 6 dip spread. I'm
wow,
a happy man.
Really?
I'm a
dip?
Happy man.
That's with like carrot sticks or pita chips or what are you dipping in your finger?
I don't discriminate. I don't a spoon?
No. No.
I want
dip. That was the weakest answer I've heard like on a podcast in a while.
You can have the dips.
Do you want some hummus? I mean,
yeah. dips.
I mean, for me it's like my cheat day, you know, not that I need it.
What are your cheat? Don't
I listen, I watch. I eat pretty well. Body's a temple. But you know, as I want like bring that pepperoni stromboli, bring the cheese steaks, bring the buffalo wings, you know.
Stromboli. Chipotle is a good call.
Get the good stuff, you know, the greasy stuff that where every bite you want a sip of beer. And that's what I'll be looking for, you know. That's what I'm going to be making for the Super Bowl. And I just want to throw this out, too, because I was converted today. I'm never a big cocktail guy. but I did me and Andrew Nolan, who works here, he turned me on to beer cocktails in the can.
Yeah, let's talk about this.
So we had a couple beers. We did like a beer Rita, which is like a beer margarita kind of riff. And then we did a Michelada riff. And then we did Amaro in Budweiser. And that was like the real shocker.
A shot of Amaro, the Italian digestivo, just poured right in a can.
So you open up it was all tall boy cans. Mm-hmm. And you take a couple sips and then you add your cocktail mixings, whether it be the Amaro or the margarita stuff, a little tequila, a little lime juice, and you put a little rim on it. And at first, you know, I'm just like, oh, listen, this ain't my thing. I'm a shot and a beer kind of guy. But not bad. Really good, actually.
And I like that for the Super Bowl, again, because you don't need glassware.
Don't need glassware.
It's in the can.
Mixes it up.
I had Knowlton brought up to my office a can of your Narragansett right there with the Amaro in it. He said, taste this. Let me know what you think it is. And I tasted it. I was like, A, that's delicious. B, I was like, it kind of tastes like a Michelada. It sounds like a salty lime sort of thing, but it was actually the Amaro in there with those sort of herbal floral roots notes and rootsy. Yeah. And I was like, wow, like I would
better than you
drink
think.
That. Yeah. And it surprised me, but I like the fact that it's all contained in the can. You finish it, you throw the can in recycling.
And it's fun.
Done.
It's fun. And it goes really well with food. I have a hard time with. We've talked on the last podcast having certain beers with food. I'm kind of picky, but that would go really well, especially with those big, you know, super. Yeah. You want that Super Bowl food? Yeah. Give me the fries.
One thing to note there, you don't want to be mixing with just any beer. It's got to be like a very standard lager.
Big time.
You don't
want to
be throwing stuff into a flavorful IPA, a stout.
Totally. That beer has enough flavor. It's on its own. Doesn't need an assist.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right, guys. Have an awesome Super Bowl Sunday.
Thanks, sir.
You know, you have to be at work on time Monday morning, Brad.
I'm never late.
We'll be there.
All right. See you guys.
This podcast has been brought to you by Carrie Polis, Emma Wertzman, and Lily Sherman, with editing by Mitra Kaboli. Our theme music is by Valerie and the Gradys. We have new episodes every Wednesday, and if you want to tell us about this or any other episode, email us at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.